And it's worked beautifully. Not having had any problems. And actually, when I tell folks about having my attorney review documents or write-up, that's exactly what I mean. Just putting, using jokes. Now, if they have a problem, they can go get their attorney to look at it. Now, when we get a little more complex, Larry and I, in deals and all that, there might be a time where we might need the other attorney or two to look at it. So far, we're happy with what we've got.
Yeah, I use an attorney out of ease these days. I don't use it because I need a... And basically, you can pay an attorney once. Just have them email the documents to you after you do get an attorney. But really, don't even use one until... certainly not to look over the rent-to-own contracts. Those are solid. If they want to, they can have someone look over. And if you pick one up on a land contract or a subject to, if you really want an attorney to take a look at it, that'd be the time. And the only time you want to have him take a look at it is when you know you're going to close it. And you know you're going to close it when you've got someone to get into it. So have him look at it after that, if you really want to.
Hey, guys, it's Joe.
Well, hey, Joe, how are you doing?
Good, good, good.
Are we saying hi to everybody?
I don't know how many people we've got on. When I came on, we had about 20 people on the call, so it might get a little noisy if more people come on as we go. This is a big group. We've got 500 people on this list, and I know that we kind of gave short notice on this call, so not everybody was able to make it, but. So if it gets noisy, or if there's noise in the background of your call, press *6 and it'll mute you out. And you can always press *6 again, and it'll bring you back into the thing.
Yeah, Joe.
Yes.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah, this is Larry Golden here from Sabatis.
Hey, Larry, how's it going, man?
On there, buddies here, and Jim, I want to say, it's great hearing from you again there. I apologize to you two gentlemen here. I haven't been with you for the last 2 months here because of we sold our house here. We had to take a loss on it, but hey, that's where it goes.
Yeah.
We bought a new house here, and we haven't had a landline for around 2 months here. We're going to get one put in tomorrow. So, Joe, you get that information. I'll email you that information. And again, Jim, you're great. It's great hearing from you again.
Oh, thanks, dude. Nice hearing from you, man. I'm glad you're around. Nice to hear your voice, dude.
And I think on that contract, like that woman was saying there, I think Joe knows what I've been through there on the contract. When I presented that to my lawyer and asked her, is this a binding contract? And it's the same contract that I got off Joe's site there. And she said, you got a very good contract here. So that made my day that day.
When I set up my corporation, I spent quite a bit of money. And it wasn't for my contracts, but I spent quite a bit of money setting up my corporation, which is Alley West. And I paid and went through a fairly large law firm, by the way, and had every one of my stuff, all the documents that I used were basically cleared. The attorneys, if you take it to a regular attorney now, one of the attorneys I used to close, they'll write it up differently than I've got it. But that's just because it's what's the norm around here. Although that doesn't make my contract any less binding or any less good.
I got an email from somebody the other day. I'm sorry, I can't remember who it is if you're on the call, but they said that they had showed some of the documents to one of their attorneys, and the attorney said that it was really poor. I don't know. There's always ways to make the thing better. There's always ways that you can improve it, and there are going to be different opinions about it. If at any point you feel uncomfortable with the process, always remember that I'm not an attorney. Don't even play one on TV, as I often say, and make yourself comfortable with it and take it to your attorney. And that's probably the same thing that I've said to Jim and to Larry here, and that's maybe why they took it to their attorney to find out, and they got a comfort level with it, knowing that that it's okay. And sometimes attorneys, just because they're attorneys, doesn't necessarily mean they understand what we're doing. Jim, I know you've talked to attorneys. I've done it many times as well, where you'll be talking to your seller or your buyer or whatever, and they'll want you to talk to their attorney. So you get on the line with them. And Jim, I think you told me that first time you did it, and I had the same experience. First time I ever did it, talked to an attorney, I thought, oh no, they're going to ask me questions I don't know, but I was able to answer all their questions. I think that's a fairly common experience. Jim, you were able to do that too, weren't you?
Yep. Yeah, I've never lost an attorney battle ever.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of times, to be honest, I've had to, even when I was a little bit newer, I've had to educate him as to what was going on.
Exactly.
I mean, oddly enough. And then explain it to him. And I've never, you know, I'd send my contract to a seller. This will always happen with a seller. I sent my contract to the seller. The seller brought their attorney in, and their attorney decided to, you know, to have at me. Now, two things. The attorney's going to get paid to ask you questions, and if they don't, they don't make any money. By the way, always remember that. So usually, if an attorney gets involved, they'll, you know, they're paid to sort of put you through the ringer. I guess that's what they're getting paid for. But I've never had anybody ever, not ever once, not take my contract even after talking to their attorney.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, most attorneys don't even know what a subject to is, and when you start talking to them, they've never heard the term, or they're not really clear on what it is, and they've never done one before because it's not a very common technique. But it is such an elegant, beautiful technique that every attorney should know what it is. Plus, it's on the HUD statement. You can actually says, is this being taken subject to? So, you know, it's something they should know. And when you educate them like that, it puts you in a position of dominance. You know, the person who's the most certain in a room is the one who whose opinion gets accepted. So, you know, always certain, sometimes right.
Mm-hmm. The seller usually will bring in an attorney, by the way, or it's been my case. A lot of times your seller will bring in an attorney that's like their Uncle Bob, who's not a real estate attorney. He just knows a little bit about law.
Exactly.
And have, you know, and it becomes real clear that I know my contract's a lot better than that guy.
Oh, yeah.
And that happens.
Yeah. You guys still hear me?
Yep.
Okay. I don't know what that beep was, but I guess we're all still here.
Jim, are you still going to, I didn't mean to interrupt, but are you going to still have your conference calls here? I haven't seen you. I finally got my, I had to go wireless there because I don't want to run cable up in this new subdivision that I'm in. So I just got hooked on there last week there, and I haven't seen any of your conference calls. Are you still going to have those?
Every Thursday night, buddy.
Thursday night at 8 o'clock.
And just for everybody else.
Buddy, I appreciate that.
Yeah, later. Larry's in the mentor program, everybody. So that Jim is one of the team leaders in the program as well, and he has these conference calls. We have the team program and the mentor program. So this is a cash flow call for the people in the cash flow newsletters, and so a lot of you guys that are on here are not in the mentor program. So just so you understand the distinction of what they're talking about there. First of all, I'd like to thank everybody that came on the call, and it's going to be all I'm going to do on this call today is just take questions and you know, throw out answers. Jim, hopefully he'll stay on us as long as he can there, and he can throw in some stuff as well. It's good to have him around. And what I promised on my email to you was the first thing I do is read emails that I received and answer the questions. And I've only got one here. And that's from Mark Blackford. Mark, are you on the line? And if you press *6, you got to press *6 again to get back open. Mark, are you on the line? Okay, well, I'm going to read your email. Hey, Mark, how's it going?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, thanks. Do you want me to read this question, or you want to just say it?
I'd be fine. Go ahead and read it.
Okay. It says, could you discuss the best ways to build a buyer's list and talk about your latest signage that you're using? I know you're always testing different materials and types of signs. I do appreciate your willingness to help us get it done. Thanks so much. All right, so building a buyer's list. Let's talk about signs first. Jim, why don't you do that?
Okay.
You want to do that?
Talk about my signs?
Yeah. Talk about what's working best for you right now.
I have, for my buyers, I use a two-part sign system.
He's talking about for rent. He's talking about finding for rent buyers right now.
My rent-to-own buyers. I've got a pre-made sign, which I get from Bandit Signs. It says rent-to-own on it in great big letters. It's 18 by 24, easily readable from across the street. Those I'm going to put in front of my houses, and those I'm going to put on main thoroughfares where people are either going to be going by them fast or... I call it, for those of you who fish, that's called trolling for me. The next system that I'm going to use when I'm doing a house is, I'm sorry, three. I'm going to put directional signs up to any house that I've got out there. So once I pick a house up, I'm going to put directional signs, which can either be pre-printed. You can get them from banditsigns.com, and they have little arrows, rent to own. that is invaluable to getting people to drive by a house and will get you really good traffic and will get you really good buyers. Trolling, the other method with my big signs, I get a lot more people, but getting people to drive by the houses is where I'm going to get a lot of my clothes, where I'm going to get people to actually take them. Because I've got 10 or 20 houses at any given time, that's why I troll, because I've always got people coming in. I've got Dream Home. I've got a bunch of other stuff that nobody else does. So I'm always bringing those buyers in. You'll learn how to make money off of them if you stay in the system, so I continually do that. And then I go to a handwritten sign. This is something that I'm going to put at, given the house in the neighborhood, I'm going to try and match. I think signs, by the way, for those of you who are listening, are the pinnacle of being able to advertise and market, which are both different little animals. So I'm going to take my handwritten signs and I'm going to put them in places. They'll be distinct for that specific house. They'll have not too much information on it, but they're going to be harder to read because there is more information on it. And I'm going to put those in places where people can read them. Coming out of a Walmart, coming out of a Walgreens. I like to say my favorite place to put that kind of stuff is on a Friday night where everybody's going to have to go in the next week, which means they're going to have to go to a Jewel. They're going to have to go to the Walmart. Then you look for really good high traffic areas that all match. So if I can find a Walmart, it's great. If I can find a Walmart down from an apartment building, that's awesome. You know, that's I'm hitting, you know, those people are going to go to the Walgreens or they're going to go to the Jewel or whatever your food store is out by you. And if so, that's like the ultra bonus. I got an apartment building. I've got a Myers. I've got a drugstore. And those are going to have a little bit more information. It's going to put 4-bedroom, you know, 3.5 bath. I try not to make them too wordy, but they're going to be more difficult to read. Ergo, people are going to need a little bit more time. So that's why I put them on the out. By the way, the outdoor, or it's not really a door, but the out of the parking lot. So wherever the exit is to the parking lot, I'm going to put one there, or to, you know, to the Walmart or something. And then my super secret ultra sign, and this is worth the price of admission today, is churches on Sunday. Saturday night, I usually like to run around to the biggest churches I can possibly find, put some signs up for Sunday morning. Those will be handwritten, not going to last long. However, they do, they get me a couple things. They get me all the traffic that I'm looking for because out by me, I've got churches that got, you know, parking spots for at least 1,000 cars. There's always going to be more than one person in that car. Usually someone's got a pen. And three, they're with their family. So it's a very family-oriented event. I call that my Saturday night church run. I use signs almost exclusively to get my buyers, and I very rarely go into the newspaper. And the only time I do that is if I've got something, like I've got a house right now in Homer Glen, which is a fairly well-to-do suburb not too far from me, and the sign police are horrible. So I have to put signs. I got one in front of the house. I've got a directional. Yeah, and I might add, even if you've got an area where we call them sign Nazis, where the sign guys are going to take your signs down and call you and tell you not to do that, you can get away with a handwritten sign where they wouldn't take that down. I'll have my pre-done signs on one block. Down from it, I'll have my handwritten sign. They'll take my pre-done sign. They'll leave my other one alone. And theory being is that they feel like it's a regular homeowner just trying to move their property, and people usually don't mess with it.
They just think you're so pathetic that all you could do is scribble the sign out on a piece of cardboard, yeah.
And scribbling out, that really gets people's attention.
Yeah, those handwritten ugly signs.
That doesn't work. That works like a charm.
Yeah, they're really powerful.
Yep.
These signs are the cheapest per lead cost that you can get anywhere. They're really powerful. And Larry, I know you've used them too, I mean, the calls just start coming in. I mean, it's like they pour in.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Joe. Jim, on that church sign, that's a great idea. But what are you putting on that sign in that church?
The church sign? I usually put the one that's got a little bit more information on it. So that'll be the sign that says 4-bedroom house. It might have the address on it, depending on how firmly I've got the house up or what I think about it. My phone number, of course. Sometimes I put my website, sometimes I don't. They usually don't on those, simply because putting the website on and just kind of getting counter, you know, against the handwritten sign, you know. You got a website that you hand wrote it. So, usually the particulars, 4 bedrooms, bath, yard, school system, whatever's most important in that area.
You know, there's so many different variations on the sign techniques and the different things that we're doing and how to find somebody to get a sign, you know, in place for you and how to put them out for you. And I spend like an hour and a half on this in the push button method. There's one disc that's completely on signs because I think it's a really important part of this process. And, sometimes you run into things where you're in areas that don't allow signs and you have to figure out how to deal with that situation, whether you want to put signs there or not. Sometimes it makes sense to put a sign even in the places that don't allow it.
They can't find you unless they catch you, by the way.
Well, sometimes it's easier to ask forgiveness than it is to ask permission. And you have to decide what your comfort level is with that, whether or not you want to do it. I don't want anybody getting in trouble. So you got to make the decision on how far to push the envelope. And different areas are going to be different. Sometimes there's going to be a little Nazi there that runs that thing, and he's going to come after everybody, you know. And what are you going to do? You're going to stop. You're going to try a different area because he's not going to cover the whole city. So hopefully that helps with that process.
How can they keep all the political signs out all the time?
That's legal. Guess who voted those in? The politicians. They're the ones that said it's legal to put their signs out, but not the other signs out.
Yep.
It's amazing, isn't it? Well,
welcome to your county government.
Yeah. So.
Them and us.
Yeah. So the next part of the question, Mark, was about how to build a buyer's list. So now that you've got all these people calling in, and Jim, by the way, when you put out, let's say you put out signs around a house, how many calls are you going to get on average per sign per week?
On average, I will get anywhere between, I can bank on 2 phone calls per sign.
Per week?
No, per day.
Per day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's going to be different in different areas. I've seen areas.
I can bank on it so much that I can tell you when my signs. I can tell you how many signs have gotten taken down, and I know I can literally tell you how many are left. I know exactly.
So if you put up 50 signs over a week's period, you've got up 100 a day, 700 calls. Is that realistic?
I never put that many signs up.
Okay.
And for that reason.
Okay.
But realistic, absolutely realistic.
Okay.
I'd say realistic, but, you know, if I take those 50 signs and I put them all within a 1-block radius of each other, no, it's not realistic.
Right.
Now, if I take those and I put those off in different areas and they're, you know, I take areas that are 5 miles apart or in different traffic patterns. For everybody on the call, I come from an advertising marketing background. I made commercials on television, so I look at my signs very, very methodically as to where I put them, how I put them, why I put them, where I put them. I generally put my own signs up for that reason. Sometimes I have people, the only signs that I'll have, you know, anybody else put out are the ones that I use for trolling, which are my big signs. And those I'm going to put in specific areas where people are coming and going, where I should find those people who want to do rent-to-own. Right before they hit a highway. Certain areas where there's going to be more apartments, that kind of stuff.
I know a lot of you guys have my download book, and if you do, there's a bonus in there that talks about marketing, and it talks about exactly what Jim's talking about here. It's not about where to put signs, but how to think about your marketing, how to design your marketing, because that's a lot of what I do as well. I believe that that this whole real estate stuff that I teach is all marketing-based real estate investing. Because once you understand marketing, you can be successful in any business that you choose. So understand the grounding of marketing, what makes marketing work, and how to think about marketing. And then you start asking questions that make your marketing work. And things like, you know, the question that Jim asked himself, well, where can I find these people that want to buy houses and putting them outside of churches on Sunday morning? That's a powerful place to put a sign because you just hit a target market that really makes sense because he looked at his demographic of his buyers and said, hey, this this is where I can find these people. And that's where he went. So, and also different areas are going to, I've got an area here in town where we try to put signs, and we'll get one call a week on 10 signs, you know, or two calls a week on 10 signs. It's really frustrating. And also we'll put signs out and they'll get taken out the next day or even the next hour, depending on how many people are out there policing the signs. There's one area near us that they pull up those, I feel like they're driving, following us around.
Schomburg does that around me.
Yeah, yeah. So
I had a sign pulled literally 15 minutes after I put it down.
Yeah. Do you put out all your signs, Jim, or are you hiring somebody?
I usually, you know what, I try, on occasion I hire people to do it. But I am way more prone now just to do it myself, simply because with each house is a different area, and I look at, I value and respect the sign so much as a tool that I almost never go to a newspaper, and I use signs purely to get all of my buyers in. So when I put them, I look at them as being very, very, very important. And so a lot of times I'll put them out myself. Although occasionally if I'm looking for a whole bunch of buyers, if I do a blast, which again is pretty rare, if I do a blast, I'm going to put 10 properties up in a weekend or 15 of them.
He's talking about a voice blast to using the Ferrant method, which I've talked about in the newsletter. So he does a voice blast, he gets calls back, and he's able to put together this many properties.
10-12 deals, literally in a weekend.
Right.
If I do that, and I'm putting that many houses on the board at one time, like I'm going to need to do that here in a minute, because I literally sold just about everything I had in a couple weeks span. I've got some stuff left. I've got about 10 left, but they're higher-end properties, so I have to put some stuff on the board. So when I do that, I'll hire somebody to put a bunch of my signs out that I used to troll with, which will be the pre-printed ones from banditsigns.com.
Yeah. How about collecting all this information from all these different properties, keeping it straight?
You can do that. Depending on, I guess, what level that you're working at, you could keep a binder or a Larry Godin, I know, keeps started by keeping a... a notebook. All of my people go into my autoresponder or my email responder. So I will initially talk to them, say hi, get their stuff. I'll push them toward a house, but then I put them into my email system so that they just continue to get my stuff. I'll also use the, I have to remember what group I'm talking to, I'm sorry. I'll also use the some of the other technologies, the Voice Blaster that we employ, and keep people's phone numbers on a list, and then once a week I kick a little letter out to them, or I kick a little voice message out to them to say, it's Jim, I just wanted to let you know I had some new properties this week. Why don't you go look at the website at
address.com. Right, you're trying to collect their email address and their phone number, but a lot of people don't have email addresses still. You know, they haven't come into the real world yet, so they don't have email addresses. And so you can do voice blast to them. So every time you get a new property, you can send them a voice blast out. And these voice blasts leave a recording on their machine, or you can set it up so that it'll play a recording when they pick up the phone. Or you can set it up so that it'll hang up if they pick up the phone and only leave a recording if they don't pick up the phone, depending on what style you're using. But if the buyers are expecting calls from you like this, they won't mind a recording. And on that recording, you can say, hey, we've got this new property over in wherever it is at this price. The payment's this much a month. If you're interested in it, take a look at it, give me a call, and I'll get you inside. You know, that's all you got to do.
If you only got 50 buyers, you got 75 buyers. I have well over 1,200. I don't even know what the full number is anymore, by the way. But, if you got a book and you've got, only 50 people in it or 60 people or even 100, and you have the time to talk to them, which you should, and, you pick up a house, you keep notes on those people. What are they looking for? What do they want? Then those are the people you can call back and say, hey, I have this house that might suit you. So you can get, just try and then keep notes on them if you're going to do it in a much less of a level.
Right. Or you can, ultimately you can hire somebody to do that for you. You can give them a cut on every deal that they sell. I know Nina's got somebody, actually it's a family member, that they fill the properties for her. And she gives them $500 to fill the property. And she gets the rest of the lease option fee. So it makes sense for everybody involved, and she's able just to go out and put more deals together. Really a sweet way to do it. You got to train that person, though, and you have to know how to do it before you train somebody. I believe that you need to learn how to do the job before you delegate it, at least in this situation.
Yep.
Does that help? Does that help, Mark? Does it give you an idea where to go with this? I'm going to assume that that's a yes.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Okay, great. Well, let's open the call now for questions. If you've got a question, just speak up, and we'll take them one at a time. Who's got a question?
Hey, Joe.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Billy from Westchester.
Hey, Billy. How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I've been reading your newsletter for a couple of months, and you always talk about when you give the examples for the lease option. A lot of your examples are lower numbers. I mean, where I live, you can't buy anything, you know, even a condo for less than like $250.
Sure.
So my concern is when, you know, you go to get a tenant to lease option or rent to buy, how are they going to have enough money to cover that mortgage and taxes and insurance and stuff like that?
Is Arrow on the call?
Sorry.
Is it
Errol? Yes, on the call. Errol is just for your Billy.
Yes.
Errol is
Errol?
In California,
yeah.
And okay. They have that all the time. Typically high rent.
And I'm sure it can be done. I'm just not sure how.
Okay, Errol, yes. Tell us.
Errol's on the call.
Okay, Errol, tell us the deal you just did in California just last week.
Last week was it's a signature property, we call it. It's on a golf course, $830,000. Put it under contract. Subject to, we bought, and we're going to turn around and have somebody in for 30,000 option. We have a few calls already, and we will sell at 899, and we're willing to go for as long as a three-year option. They're actually beating down the door in California because the prices are such that folk aren't buying the conventional way. Very few people know how to lease option, and Joe's methods are just incredible. They are killers out here.
What about the monthly payment, Arrow?
The monthly payment, well, it's going to be $3,000. It's a little high for, it's going to be $4,100. And we structured it in such a way that
you said
the market rate.
I didn't mean to jump in. $3,000, Arrow?
$3,000 a month.
$3,000 for an $3,000 for a $900,000 property is a bargain.
And, well, actually, there is a shortfall, which the seller is going to take back. A shortfall of $1,100. And the seller is comfortable with doing that. Rather than pay $4,100, they pay $1,100 and have the house move. And it was a no-brainer for him. He actually is a realtor, my broker. And so he saw a good deal, and it took him a weekend to make his mind up on it. Beautiful property.
So there's, I guess, what Errol's saying, there's depending on, you know, the market, you know, the prices in your area, Billy it is, right?
Yep.
Are higher. In an area like that, people are going to expect to pay higher rents anyway. You want to try and get it down as much as possible. And what I tell my sellers, I just had this argument with an older lady, not an argument, but she said, you know, her payment was 21, and she said, how about getting a little extra money from me, a month? And I said, I can do that if that's what you really want to do. I said, but that's going to, you know, basically it's going to help, it's going to impede a little bit as to who I can put in the property. So are you willing to hold it for another month and, you know, pay your $2,100 a month, you know, just so that you can make a couple extra hundred, or do we want to get it off the books and get you out and get you into your other thing? And, of course, her answer was, you know, of course I do. And the first person I had hit on that property said, I'll do $1,850. Now, that's a $300 shortfall on that property, right?
Yep.
But if I can get enough option fee and I know I can cash her out in a year if I write the contract, then I can backtrack it. So if I can get $10,000 as an option from her, I know I can offset the rent.
Okay.
So you want to try and get the rents down, but just because the rents are high isn't going to mean that, especially if you're in an area where everything is pricey, that doesn't mean that people won't have it. If they were going to buy the house, they'd be paying that. And they're probably, with the existing mortgages that you have in place, are probably going to be paying less to get into the property on the onset, even with them being higher than they're going to be. So don't let it, you know, it might be more difficult for you to do, but that doesn't mean that you're not going to get them. And you should be able to get some higher. If the properties are, bigger ticket properties, you should be able to get bigger lease options.
It's also important to tie the payment to the purchase of the price rather than to it as a rental. And you tell them, look, you know, if you have a price that's higher, because let's take an example. I sold a property in Los Angeles up in the Hollywood Hills. It was $495,000. It was $4,300 a month because the interest rate was 9% at the time. This has been a while ago. So the interest rate was really high. And what he was doing, though, he was buying the property. And I told him that this is what the payment would be if you were buying it. And he understood that because I put it that way. And instead of, if you want to go rent, you can go rent a property. But if you want to own a property, this is the payment that you're going to have to pay. Can you afford that? And if you can't afford it, do you, you know, does it make sense to buy it as a lease option? So that's another argument that you can use in this to help you deal with those types of deals. And right now, since the bubble on all these high-end markets is popping all over the country, it's, you know, this is the time to be doing these kind of structures because there's a lot of sellers that can't sell. They can't get their equity out, and they want to try to get their equity out, and or that are actually over their equity. So there's a lot of stuff you can do right now in these markets. It's really a good time to do seller financing in those markets.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people, you know, and don't discount the fact that, you know, if somebody's had a property up for rent and it's been up for rent for 6 months and they haven't moved it, you know, and they're paying $3,000 a month, they'll gladly only pay $1,000 a month because, I mean, $3,000, you're bleeding.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, if you come to them and say, look, I got somebody who can do 22, you know, can you make up the extra 8? Yet, you know, the answer is going to be yes.
Yeah, fine.
Or it should be yes.
What your job is to ask enough questions to find the pain. If you can find their pain, the thing that really bothers them about this process, then you can focus your deal, and you can structure your deal around their solution. And usually you can get everything else that you need. Just solve their problem. Just make sure it's profitable for you. Then when you make an offer.
Hey Joe, that means the renter buyer, if he's paying less, then he can save money for actually doing the purchase if they exercise their option. But if they don't exercise, so everybody's win-win. And then if they don't exercise their option, God, the light bulb's going off. I was like, so slow. Okay, so it's win-win. And then if they don't exercise the option, the original buyer is going to be wanting to do it again.
Right.
Because it works.
The only downside that I see on this is the fact that the buyer is paying a low payment. If they bought the property, their payment would go up. And it's always good to have it so they can go down, and that's not always possible. But sometimes you can structure deals for them to close the deal so you subsidize their payment for a while, and that's a possibility as well because you can give them some rent credit back or something.
Yep. I always and that's the one thing that I bump into. I'll get a property, you know, that I can take a $400,000 property. And, you know, the rent would be $2,000. Someone had the property for a long time. Price went up. I can stick somebody in there for $2,000 a month pretty easy. What I need to let them know or what I do is, you know, they need to know when they go to do the purchase of the price, especially if you're not going to put any money down. You're paying too much. So, you know, that's something they'll need. I at least tell my folks.
So can I jump in?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, sir. And I think, Joe, certainly for Barry and I, you really hit it when we listen to some of your tapes and materials about finding the pain and just listen to the seller. I don't go with a preconceived notion as to what I want to do with the property. I listen to the buyer and structure the deal around what they're looking to do. In the case of my broker, for instance, I knew he was back 2 months for the $100 a month. He's on the verge of going into foreclosure. He doesn't care about making money on it. He just wants relief. And that's where the tools that you teach us come into place. So one, yes, the marketing, knowing the target market, and finding the right type of approach. Once I solved his problem, Barry and I, the rest became just the formality of writing up the paperwork. And I think that's the biggest challenge starting out fresh, is to know pretty much the target market you're looking at and what tools to apply. And certainly in our case, we have gone the low-tech way. We've really gutted it out to meet people and talk and things like that. And we're still continuing to do it. But we imagine once we employ the high-tech tools, which you have, which we have access to, we just need to create some time to do it. we will really take off, we expect.
You guys just recently set up your websites and all that stuff, didn't you?
We set it up about a month ago. To our disgrace, we haven't been able to use it because we haven't made time out. But the way we go about it so far, it's the hard way, if you will, but we're getting results out of it.
Yeah.
Once we now get up to the next level, which is probably in the next couple of weeks, certainly before we come to Indianapolis.
Well, those autoresponders are already set up, and Rick has set up a place where you can opt in people. So you should, when you're on the phone with people, just open up your browser to your site and type in their information, their contact information, and it automatically puts them into that autoresponder, and they'll start getting emails from you. Exactly. I mean, it is that simple.
Okay.
It is really.
I'm on the low tech end of things, man.
That's all it is. You're just putting them into you're typing the information into a web page, just like you're, making an order on Amazon and typing, their name and an address and phone number. And
All there is to it?
Yeah. And as soon as you hit send, they're in your database and they start getting the auto response.
Oh, excellent.
Ask Rich which site it is that does that, but it's going to be your buyer site.
So he set us up and we actually had a trial. We spent about 2 hours with him. We just didn't do the follow-up like we should.
Right.
So this weekend, we have it on our plate.
Because the goal is to try to, first of all, is to build a relationship with them and to get them to take action on the things that you need them to take action on in order for you to be effective for them, to be able to solve their problem. And that's the autoresponder works very well. As everybody on this call should know, because that's why you're on this call, because all my stuff goes through an autoresponder. You get so much stuff from me. Now, you're getting stuff from me that I write new, but you're also getting stuff, autoresponder stuff, that I wrote, a year ago, and some of it longer than that. I mean, I got an email from myself because I'm on my own autoresponder, and it was talking about my 6-year-old daughter who's now 10 years old. I've got some stuff on there that's kind of that's old, but I thought it was still effective, and that's why I left it on the process, because the information is still just as good today as it was then.
God, I knew you when your daughter was 6 years old.
So anyway, but having that process makes it a lot easier. But for those of you who haven't started yet, that's not the place to start, because that's how you lose your focus. The place to start is by making offers, to start doing deals immediately. And we were talking with the mentor group just before we came on this call. We had 2 hours with them, and starting this for rent method. I've talked a lot about it in the past newsletters. I've also talked, it's in the Stupid Proof programs and the push button method. It's in the mentor program. So it's in those things as well. So if you get one of those programs, you'll be able to listen to that, start with that, because it's a real easy thing to do. You just pull out the newspaper and get on the phone and start making offers. And it teaches you some very, very important things, which is how to talk to sellers.
I don't mean to get off track, but I wanted to, and I'm kind of not, but I promise I'll bring this back full circle. But one of the things that Joe and I, both being ex-filmmakers, were talking about at one time was actually taking a video camera, plucking a couple of us, Ozum, Bob and I, or one of us, down in a city with absolutely no money in our pocket, period, and a cell phone, and see how long it would take us to actually put cash in our pockets. And we were, I'm pretty positive that I could actually put cash in my pocket within a week of having a cell phone, some cardboard, and a marker.
Right. We're going to set them outside next to the dumpster at the grocery store so they can get the boxes. He gets a free mark. Oh, no, we were going to actually make you have to beg for money.
Right, barter for a phone. And I'm and people listening to this, you're kind of laughing, and we're not. I mean, we're absolutely, because I know, given a cell phone, I don't care what town you put me in, I can make money in a week.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and that's how you need to start when you do this. You don't need to worry about all the, part of being part of the mentor group and part of being part of this, we've come up with, Joe has, and we've all kind of, entered stuff, but we figured out really great ways to make a business out of what we do.
System.
But, the simplicity of it is what you need to know is have a good foundation for what you're doing. And to do that, you need a cell phone, a pen, a marker, and you can make that work. And that's how you need to start anyway. You need to learn how to make it work that way. And then once you learn that, and once you learn that kind of stuff, then having all the rest of the tools that we've developed and figured out and stuff just make the rest of the business run smoother and, you know, give you less time that you got to put into it.
Good stuff, yeah.
Jim, you is like the story of the guy last year or whenever it was with the red paper clip who traded it and traded it and traded it, and somebody finally gave him a house.
Yep. That's a great story.
Red paper clip. All right, who else has questions?
I have a question about you guys. Do you have a LLC or something?
Who's talking about it? Who's talking?
This is Suzy.
Hey, Suzy, how you doing?
Mojave.
Hey. Okay, go ahead.
I have a question about if you have an LLC or something, or if you have two LLCs for real estate. How do you make them for real estate? And, you know, do you have any tips for us? Or
don't worry about it until you start need one.
Well, that's the first best advice I've heard. Yeah. Yeah, use a C corp, or use a Schedule C on your tax returns and be a DBA, doing business as, and just start going. You know, you don't have to worry about asset protection until you have something to lose. If you don't have anything to lose, why worry about asset protection? All it does is helps these guys sell their programs on asset protection and sell you into LLCs and things that you don't need. If you don't have a business, you don't need an LLC.
And I'm going to add in, and I still to this day don't, and I love telling the story, although it's getting a little complicated at this point, but I still to this day do not have a business card. This day, and I'm very successful at what I do,
yeah.
I still do not have a business card.
Right.
I haven't needed it. And and I think that just goes to needing a company, needing all that stuff. They become roadblocks to you. I didn't put, a business card out because of websites and all kinds of other stuff and changes and this and that. And then eventually, I just don't have one. And if people ask me, I just tell them I don't. And I've never had anybody not do business with me because I either don't have a company, which I just set up. Not very long ago, by the way, my LLC, I finally just set it up. But you have to understand I'm also doing 20 properties. I'm holding 6, 7, 8, 10 of them at any given time that I've got on land contracts, and I do have stuff I need to protect.
And if you're trying to set up a business to create credibility, a web page will create credibility faster than a business will. Because nobody sees the business, or in business name or whatever. You can create a web page with your name on it and information about what you do really simply, and people can go to it and say, hey, oh yeah, I see he's got a real web page. He must be somebody. Because most people still don't understand how easy it is to set up a web page. It's just it's like creating a flyer. They're simple. You can buy lots of different web pages, like the stuff that I sell and as well. I mean, there's lots of pages out there that you can buy that'll easily set you up for that. But is the reason, Suzy, that you're asking about it is because of taxes, because of asset protection, because
asset
of credibility,
protection.
Asset
yeah.
protection. So if you let's say you've got a lot of things that you want to protect. Let's say you've got 20 houses, and you want to protect those houses. Now the next thing you have to decide is how much equity is in those houses. If you have 10% equity in those 10 houses, maybe you got, and they're each worth $100,000. That means you got $100,000 in assets to protect. If that's the total asset base that you've got, it might make sense to split those properties up into separate LLCs. You have to determine what your risk tolerance is versus the amount of money it costs you to set up an LLC and to maintain it every year, because there's a cost to that for every year. So if let's say you've got all 10 of them, if you've got very little equity, then you could put more of them in a single LLC. If you own them free and clear, then you have a higher risk on each one. So if one of them goes down in a lawsuit or whatever, it'll take all the others. It potentially could take all the others with it. If you got 10 properties are all free and clear, maybe it makes sense to put them into separate LLCs. Now, if you've got $20 million in free and clear property, you probably aren't going to worry about, you may not want to have 20 separate LLCs with $1 million in each. So the amount of money you have makes a difference as well. So you got to look at your and the amount of time it's going to take you to recoup the money that you lose. So all those things make a difference. you know, your taxes make a difference too, and how what you're going to be paying on your taxes, because a lot of the money that we're making through these businesses is taxable as capital gains. So you want to have some other things that you can deduct. So if you have a C corp or an S corp, you can set up a retirement plan within those corporations, and you can put 20% of your income aside that you don't have to pay taxes on. You can put it aside and put it into property. You know, you can set up a self-directed program to do those types of things. So there's ways to protect your money that way.
And LLC takes the place of a C corp.
An LLC, most of the time, what you're going to do when you set up an LLC is it's going to be a pass-through entity. The way I have my LLC set up, I've got several LLCs, and then they all feed down into a C corporation. And then the C corporation feeds down into me. And so that there's layers of protection in the process. And you have to layer it from the top and from the bottom. You know, coming down from the top onto this, and I'm getting kind of complex here, but if you come down from the top, it's hard for them to get down to the money, but they also can come up from you personally, so you have to have the money shielded from the behind, behind as well. So you gotta protect yourself both ways, and it really makes sense to find a professional who knows how to handle this stuff. When you get to a point where you have, $1 million or something, then it makes sense to start protecting that asset. Because that would be catastrophic if you had a lawsuit, because they can easily be a $1 million lawsuit and they can easily take everything from you. So you want to know where to protect it. I mean, if you've got a house with a lot of equity, it always makes sense to have a home equity line on that property. So that if a lawsuit ever came to your door, go out and cash a check and get the cash, put the lien against your property right away. And that gives you a little bit of protection. And, I don't know the legality of that. I haven't talked to an attorney about it. I'm not an attorney. I don't play one on TV. that's spiel. But, make sure that you've got the cash in your hands, because it puts you in a more powerful position if whatever happens. So does that kind of answer the question? And I'll kind of run
yeah,
it
I was okay. Concerned about my Hawaii property and Mississippi.
Well, then get it into an LLC. If you've got a lot of equity in there, then get LLC set up and do that. Because it will give you some shelter. It doesn't completely shelter those properties, but it at least it can limit some of your liability on these things. If you get a lawsuit in one, it's less likely that they can cross over into the other, unless they can prove fraud or they've got a really clever attorney.
And if they're yours, you can always start looking at putting they're yours personally. You're going to hold for a while, and they've got equity in them. You can always look at putting them into a trust.
Yeah, there's a whole it's a whole different animal there too.
A whole different animal.
Yeah.
If you want some real protection, you could put your personal stuff in a trust.
Yeah.
Protect everything that you own.
Yeah, it hides from the public who owns that property, because you have the name of a trust, and then you've got the beneficial interest is owned by somebody else, but that beneficial interest is not public record, and you can change that beneficial interest without recording it. So there's some really interesting things that you can do with trusts as well. It's kind of outside the scope of what we're talking about here, though.
I had another question about depreciation. And that is, when you buy a property, like when I bought the Hawaii property, I only paid $50,000 for it. Actually, I didn't pay that much because I haven't paid that much on it. But is your depreciation on that total amount?
The depreciation is on the tax basis of the property, on the improvements, not on the land. So let's say you've got a piece of property, and for tax purposes, let's say it's worth $200,000, and for tax purposes, the land is worth $50,000, and the improvements are worth $150,000, and you bought it for $200,000. That $150,000 is the tax basis that you can depreciate over 27.5 years. So you divide that $150,000 by 27.5, you get $4,000 or $5,000, whatever that number is. I can't do that in my head real quickly, but somewhere in that neighborhood, that's what you can deduct from your personal income if it's active, if it's an active investment. There's a difference between active and passive investments in real estate. And as long as you're putting a few hours in on these things, then it can be counted as active. There's lots of ways to show that you're actively involved in a property. You don't necessarily even have to manage your own property and still be actively involved in your real estate business. It can take very little time a year. There's actually an hour figure, but I'm not sure how they monitor those hours, and I'm not even sure what those hours are. But almost anybody that's on this call would probably be an active investor.
So, Joe, if they change the tax assessment, like the tax bill goes up, then does that amount?
The tax, yeah, the amount that you're paying, all the stuff that's going out of your pocket, interest, the taxes, property taxes, insurance, any losses that you have, damage, you know, repairs to the property, you know, property manager costs, all that stuff is rental property is all tax deductible. Yeah, all that's tax deductible. So if you've got an income, let's say you've got income of $1,000 a month, and all your expenses add up to $900 a month. So you got $100 a month positive cash flow on your property, and that doesn't include principal and all this stuff too. You got to think in some of those things. But let's say there's $100 that you're getting that's profit, that's taxable. That's what you'd have to pay on every month because all that other stuff was deducted. So it's going to go against the negative. Now, if you have a month that's vacant, you can deduct that whole amount for that month because you didn't make income that month. So it'll offset it. It'll help to offset the loss that you have for that month for that vacancy. You understand that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, it's cool stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, this whole depreciation, I mean, if you guys haven't listened to that audio about long-term investing, you ought to listen to that because I get into that in some detail about why it makes sense to hold properties for long-term, you know, even if you have negative cash flow. And that website is joecrump.com/long-term, L-O-N-G-T-E-R-M, all one word, all lowercase. It's free audio. It's almost 2.5 hours long, and it's worth listening to. And you ought to also read, I had that contest and I've been trying to get a hold of, I had this contest where we had the, where I gave an example and I asked people to basically tell me what I meant in this example, and it was all about negative cash flow and why negative cash flow might make sense for an investor. And you can go read about that at joecrump.com/best response, all one word, lowercase, best response. All right. Who else has a question?
Joe,
I have a question about the for rent method.
Okay. Who's this?
My name is Sam. And if the seller signs a memo and then you find a buyer, now the buyer would pay you a fee, the option money.
Okay.
But then he signs a lease with the seller. Won't he get confused?
No, because it's outlined on the – do you have the copies of the stuff that I've written up?
Yeah.
Okay. On that there, it shows that you're getting an assignment fee and that it's also the lease option fee.
You tell the buyer that you just going
to
assign.
Yeah, all you're doing is assigning your right to buy that property. So you're the principal in the transaction. When you put together the lease option memo, that makes you the principal in the transaction because now you have the right to buy that property. Now that also means that you can go sell it without having a real estate license. So when you go out and sell that property, and you need to be the principal. If you're not the principal in the transaction, you're trying to sell these properties and you don't have a license, you're in violation of license law. So you got to be the principal. It's okay to sell your own property. And by having an interest in the property, that's the same as owning it. It gives you the right to sell it.
And many sellers, when you tell them you're going to get a lease option buyer, they want an option fee, the homeowner.
What do you tell them when they ask for that?
They're the seller. They want an option fee, some option money to come to them.
Okay. Well, there's different ways you can handle that. First of all, is say, no, that's how I make my money. I mean, I get paid by the – you don't have to pay me anything. I get paid by the buyer, but that's how I make my money in the transaction. And then see what they say. Now they say, oh, no, but I don't want to do that. I want at least my deposit. And Jim, why don't you mention on that?
I I know that we're always at odds with this. I always give a deposit out, and it's 1 month, and that's all you're going to get. Occasionally, depending on the property, depending on who has it, I have actually on occasion split an option fee, depending on if it's you have to understand a lot of my properties come from people that I deal with on a consistent basis. I work with rehabbers, and I've got when I tell you that I got a property sitting on my computer that I just picked up that I have made no phone calls to get just because I move a lot of stuff. But I will always give out a 1 month deposit. And, the reason being is it makes getting the deal much easier. And, if the deal doesn't happen, or if the people don't do a purchase and the folks come back to me, I have covered their butts as much as they were going to be covered in what they had asked for.
I will also always write in that I get that deposit back when the house closes, which is a good way to be able to get that cash back in your pocket. So what I've written down or what I developed was that, you know, in the writing, in the final contract, I'll say that Jim Drayle has paid, you know, Bernie Getz. I'm sorry, I was watching a documentary. Has paid Bernie $1,700 as deposit. When client A buys property or exercises their option, Jim Drayle gets the payment back. I actually put my address in there and to where they can send the check just in case it goes to closing before and, you know, without my knowledge of it. So it's also a way to get that, you can get that money back. I like doing it because it makes a very simple argument to my folks. They get what they're looking for, and I've given them some safety. So I know if, in my own brain, that if my buyer didn't work out, that I gave them as much safety as they were going to get or were asking for. And if my buyer takes it, then I'm going to get that money back.
Do they actually send it to you?
Yeah, closing company will send it to you. You just get a check in the mail when it closes. I'm usually abreast of, because of the way that I do my business, I because I've got mortgage brokers, that I've got a team of mortgage guys in a company that deals with all my buyers. Most people, because of my knowledge, trust me emphatically, and so I'm almost always aware that the deal is going to close.
Does that answer the question?
One question. When you're looking at, when you have a homeowner that contacted you from the for rent, there's a thin line. How would you decide if you want to just give them a lease option tenant, or do you want to buy it yourself as a subject to, and then you keep the tenant and make some more money?
How do I make that decision?
Right, because now if it's a good deal, you could buy it subject to, because they're willing to give the home anyways.
You know, I actually will make that argument to people, and I kind of pick the ones I want out at will, although that's a little bit more difficult to do and kind of a more difficult argument. The for rent method is a great way to start doing this and to do it. Being able to then take and hold the properties that you want is not another animal, but it's another part of it. So if people are willing to give them to you on a subject to, and you really want the property, I highly suggest taking, you know, especially if you can make that argument.
That's what makes you rich. That's what makes you rich, by the way.
Yeah.
It's not these flip deals. These flip deals will make you good income and good living, but the buying the properties, keeping them, holding them, that's what makes you rich.
Yeah. And that's actually part of my repertoire. When I talk to somebody, I basically give them those two options, and I a lot of times have people choose to give me subject to a land contract. And as well, I make chooses. I'm able to then make choices about which ones I want to take, because I won't take everyone anymore on a land contract, even if they're offered up.
Yeah. When you start getting the snowball effect happening, when you get all these deals coming in at you all the time because you're doing everything, and you know, your energy brings all sorts of good things to you, you get real picky about which properties you want to keep. When you're still first starting out, you know, you can end up making a career of one property and focusing on that, and it never comes together because you're struggling too hard on it. Sometimes you have to walk away from it and work on something else, and then come back to it if it's still available. You need to have people that are motivated, involved, and trusting you. And at the beginning, sometimes you can't get people to do that because you're not good enough. And to get good enough is not something you're born with. It's something you learn. And it's very learnable and very, very doable. You know, I've got people that tell me all the time, oh, you know, well, it's easy for Jim. It's easy for Bob. It's easy for Ozm. You know, it's easy for you to be able to put these deals together. I've heard you on the phone. You guys are great. Well, the only way they got great is because they did it. And they did the work. They followed through. They made the calls. And they learned how to do it. And the only way you learn how to do anything, I believe, is to actually do it and find a way to do it. And these methods that we're teaching are so simple, you know, not entirely. I mean, they're so risk-free. They're not always completely simple, but this for rent thing is pretty simple. But it's so risk-free. You don't have any risk. I mean, there's no money in it. There's no credit in it. If it doesn't happen, you've just lost some time, and maybe you've lost a little face, which is not fun to do, but it doesn't happen very often. You know, once you make a fool of yourself once, you sure don't want that to happen again, so you make effort to learn what to say next time so you don't make a fool of yourself. And you usually don't, next time you have that question, you usually have a good answer for it, especially if you've been listening to my stuff. All right, who else has got a question?
Joe?
Yep.
This is Mac in Washington.
Hey, Mac, how's it going?
How are you?
Good.
I really appreciate you doing this. It's fantastic. I'm too new to ask a lot of questions, but one I had was I'm in kind of a high-end market, and I don't want to start out there. I want to start out, in the, 100, 150, 200 range. And I'm wondering how to do something out of town if you can't inspect it.
Oh, I asked this question when we did the movie. I love the answer you gave me, man. It was great. It was so simple.
I don't know. Should we tell them the movie story? Okay, well, we should not. Okay. Go ahead with the answer.
That's how I met Joe, by the way. We did it. I met Joe through mutual friend, is the short version of the story. And
college buddy.
And awesome, try and buy a million properties in 3 days. And which was an experience, and I'd love to be able to tell the whole story, but I don't want to waste time. And my question immediately to Joe was, well, how the hell are we going to know if there's, the house is in good shape, seeing as that, we just did this deal in Washington. And the answer was very simple. It was so simple was, well, you send a buyer over to it, and if the guy tells you that there's no roof on the property, basically, and it's that simple, and you go, oh, yeah. Duh, because the way that we write the contracts up, there's no risk. You don't have to take that property. If the guy lied to you and the property's not worth what the guy said it was, then you're out of the deal, and because of the way that we write our contracts up.
Right.
Or you go back to him and say, hey, you didn't tell me about the hole in the floor in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. What's the deal with that? Or is that something you're going to be fixing? Oh, yeah, I'm going to fix that. Okay.
So you're basically getting somebody else to do your work for you.
Yeah.
Okay. And I guess signs are out of the question if I'm talking about Atlanta or, Tuscaloosa or something.
Why?
Well, I mean, how do I do signs if they're 1,000 miles away? Do you guys have a way of paying somebody to...
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Put an ad in the paper. Send somebody signs. You can have the homeowner do it. They'll put a sign up at least in the front yard. You can, start making calls to real estate agents and find one who'll work for you and take a, cut when it's done. There's absolutely ways to get that done.
Raina just ran an ad in Craigslist, and she got a bunch of people to respond.
You could go to ads in the paper if you really wanted to in the ad, and not have as many signs up. You can at least send one to the homeowner or the homeowner's neighbor who'll be glad to put it up in the yard for you.
Right.
Yeah, we used to send out signs all the time when we'd put deals together, and if the house was vacant or if the owner wasn't there, we'd send it to the neighbor. It works. And we'd even send them a lockbox and ask them to put them on that for us as well. And they're happy to do it most of the time.
Okay. Would you recommend starting close to home, or would you, how much importance
yes.
do you place on?
Yeah, do it if you can, start close to home because it's easier. Because you can go there, you can see the property, you can get your hands on it, you can get face-to-face with people. Sometimes you may not be able to create confidence over the phone because you're not really smooth, but if you meet him in person, they'll see, hey, oh, this is a regular guy, he's a nice guy. He may be a little bit of an idiot. He doesn't know what he's doing, talking about yet. But, I feel like I can trust him. He's not a scam artist.
Okay.
And doing that face-to-face is sometimes easier. And I know Jim still does that face-to-face stuff all the time, don't you?
Yep.
Yeah. But then it depends on your personality, too. I like to stay in the office. I don't like to leave the office. And you don't have to once you get good at it. But sometimes it's easier when it's local because your resources, you're going to have more resources locally too. You're going to have people, you get signs going, you get stuff like that happening quicker. And a lot of times it's easier to learn the process if you do it yourself first. So I'd suggest if you can, try it yourself first. And then if you run into too many walls, then expand out into other areas.
Gotcha. All right. Thanks.
You bet.
Hey, Joe.
Yes. Who's this?
This is Ben from Washington.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, I deal with buyers that don't have the down payment. Have you ever taken anything other than cash for a down payment, like a car, boat, jewelry, anything like that? Have you ever dealt with that? Or
I haven't done it. Well, maybe I have. I've done so many deals.
I take payments.
I take a Harley.
I've got a Harley. Do you got a nice house?
Yeah, I could get you one. You know, yeah, absolutely. Take anything you that you can spend or that you can use.
So how would you write that up in the contract? I mean, would you just list that under?
Yeah, as the down payment.
As the down payment.
Yeah. And you can, I'd put a dollar figure. I'd put a dollar figure to it.
Put a dollar figure on.
Yeah, because if there's ever a dispute or whatever, you gotta put a or it's gotta apply to their down payment. So let's say you've got a, you know, $5,000 item that they're that you're buying, or a $10,000 item that that they're giving you. You gotta monetize it so that you can put it towards the purchase price.
And one of the things on the mentor call that we talked about is somebody asked me if I, you know, I get people who, the question was, you know, I'll get people who don't have the downs that I'm looking for a house. I take payments on certain houses, especially if I've got one that won't move. You know, let's say I call the down or the option fee on it $4,000. Somebody says, well, I got 25. I'll say, okay, you know, how can we get the rest of that? You make that in payments. You know, do you have a bonus coming? And I'll take payments on that kind of stuff, which also, by the way, is a very interesting way to sort of start getting monthly income. So if you got a house that won't move, there's nothing wrong with taking part of the option money now and then taking it in payments.
Nice little residual.
Knowing full well that you will not get all of them, by the way.
Yeah.
Some of that, I wouldn't do that consistently, but I do it on houses that I'm having a hard time moving or a house that won't move real quick.
Yeah. Try, if you do that, make sure that that amount that you're loaning is higher than what you were originally going to charge them, if you can do that.
Yeah.
Because then that'll give them incentive to pay it off. And if they pay it off in a certain amount of time, maybe give them a bonus or give them part, you know, give them a discount or whatever. And also, if it's possible, if they've got something to secure it against, if they've got a car that's paid off, you can secure it against the car. You know, you get to take a note against their car. And so there's you know, if they've got another property, secure it against the other property. Most of the time they won't, but sometimes they will. You know, if they've got any kind of valuable item that they can secure it against, then you can do that, and that way you get the item if they don't pay it off. Although collections is no fun, and I wouldn't really recommend going after it. I'd rather let it go away.
Yeah.
But it sure gives them a lot more incentive to pay you.
Well, it would be easy for me. I was in the car business, and so people say, well, I've got a car or something, I can wholesale the thing away really easily. You know, so you can get your money, but keeping the monthly payment down, taking payments for the area is trying to keep the payments down, because the payments are high for the value of the homes, basically, you know, it's a high area.
Right.
You know, tax time is a beautiful time where everyone gets some money back from the government, and it's also a wonderful time to be able to get some more of your options.
Yeah. February, March, April, man, you just need to really be pumping, because that's a good time to be doing it. Most people think that real estate is best in the spring, but that's for lease options, that's the time to do it.
Yep, everyone's got some money in their hand.
I have another question, not related. I did buy your book, and on the bonuses it had the website design program.
Oh, on the We Will Buy?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I sent you an email, but hadn't got a response, and I guess if you want to wait, I can email you again or something.
You can sign up right online for it. It's wewillbuy.com.
Right. I had a question, though. I have my own domain name already set up.
Okay.
And so I didn't know if that was something. I know that it was related to We Will Buy, and then it was a slash or something. But if I had my own domain name and then wanted to use a similar website that you had.
Do you know how to create a redirect?
No.
Okay. I could give you do you know how to put up your... you have your own web hosting?
Right.
Okay, I could send you a file that's a redirect, so that when people go to your site, it'll redirect them to We Will Buy.
I gotcha.
See how, so it'll redirect them to my site, but it'll still, your site on my site, so you could do that way. And
I was more interested in using the content, setting up my own website, and then using your links to, maybe satisfy some of your needs too.
Right. Well, the what I do is lease or I license that program through the push button method. If you bought the push button method program, then you have the rights to use that and the other web pages that I've written for the mentor students as well. So that's all through the push button method. I don't give away the HTML for the stuff other than that.
That's the push button method.
Oh, you have it? Well, it's in there.
Yeah, Yeah, I guess I missed that.
It's a huge program. If you go into the contracts zip file, or I think it's disk number 20, the HTML for the web pages, I believe, is in that program. So all those different things are in there, and the Weeble Eye is in there as well.
Okay.
So you can use that or modify it for yourself.
So basically, since I purchased the push threaten method, then basically I have the rights to use that.
Correct. That gives you a license to use that.
Or change it or modify it or whatever.
Correct.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Well, yeah, some of it you're going to have to modify because it's got CGI script and stuff that you're going to want to put it into an autoresponder and all that stuff. Actually, if you want to have it set up, if you don't know much about web stuff, if you bought the push button method, you can use my online guy. He'll set it up for you. It's $500 is what he charges. I don't get any of that. And then we put it on. I bought a dedicated server that everybody can put that on, and I just charge him $79 a month, and that includes an autoresponder and the dedicated server and all that stuff. So if you want to be on that, send me an email, and I'll get you Rick's information, and he'll set it all up for you.
And where would I send the email?
Just coaching at realestatemoneymaker.com. Okay, great. Well, good luck with it.
But the push button in the push button has the online information.
The online, which
one? You said online guy that was dedicated. You'll send me that information, or that's in the push button?
No, you'll have to send that. Send me an email, and I'll get you that information. Yeah, and look at the videos that I put in that program. The first three videos, because we talk about those websites, and those websites are included. All the ones that are mine are included in that program.
Yeah, you know, I didn't realize those were DVDs until just yesterday. I listened to them, and then I was like, oh, I realized that.
Man, I wrote a sales letter that's 20 pages long on that, and I still didn't explain everything that's in that program. And I think that people get confused. They call me up and say, what do we do first? And I created that DVD, that where to start. So it kind of gives you a place to get going with, and it doesn't have you start with the DVDs. So.
Right. Yeah, we got back to those.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I got stuck on Ozm talking about Hitler and stuff like that, so I had to put him down, you know.
He's wacko sometimes. Yeah. That's good stuff. All righty. Who's else got a question? Thanks, Ben.
I have another question about the long-term, the Texas properties you mentioned.
Okay.
How would he buy it with the partner? Do we form an LLC so he puts money, we get a mortgage on his name, and then we split the profits? I can do the work, and he puts the money in the credit.
Well, if the only reason to use somebody else as credit is if your credit isn't in place to do that, or your credit is maxed out with other properties. So that would be a reason to bring on a partner. I have a lot of people come and say, oh, I've only got a 620 credit score, but we can't do a loan with that. But if you had a partner who did, you could set it up that way, and that partner could come. Or if you had some money for the down payment and he doesn't, and you want to put that money in, you can do it that way as well. So, because the way we're doing this, we've got a zero down program that you can use, but you still need 3% to come to closing cost, come to closing with. So you need 3% plus. You'll need to show 6 months of reserves, and those reserves, 6 months payments of reserves. And now those reserves can be a home equity line, they can be a 401k, they can be an insurance policy, anything like that. But I'm strongly suggesting to people, don't do the zero down loan. It's a 10% loan, which is not bad for a zero down loan, but it's still high. And you can get the 7.95% on a 5% down loan. If you put 5% down plus 3% closing costs, that means you need 8% to close the deal. But within 2 weeks after closing, I'm giving you back 10%. So you're putting 8% in, you're getting 10% back. That means you end up with 2% in cash in your pocket. And there's still going to be a negative cash flow, but the negative cash flow is going to be pretty low, at least on some of these properties. Some of them, there's actually, they don't have negative cash flow at all, but most of them have a little bit of negative cash flow. And then you can use that money, that $3,000-$4,000, whatever it is, to pay the negative cash flow. It's only $150 or whatever for several years, and to get a tenant in there and all that stuff. That's the way to do it if you've got credit, or if one person has credit and one person has a little bit of money to put down, you can combine forces and you can buy the properties together and hold them long term. But if you've got good credit and you can borrow, there's no reason. And by good credit, I'm talking 680 on this credit score. We have some that can do a little bit less than that, but 680 is probably a pretty good place to shoot for. 720, you'll get a better, you'll get the better interest rate. So, and you can also
buy a lot more properties. Find some people who have good credit, and then
That's the beauty of it. If you want to bring other people in, you can either partner with them, or you can just pay them a fee. Pay them a few thousand dollars to use their credit. That's a possibility too. And they can borrow it, and then they can sell it to you subject to. You can use your money. So, I believe that complies with the RESPA things. So that's one way to do it. So there's so many opportunities with this. There's a lot of neat things that are happening with this new program. And I think that it makes sense for anybody. If you're making, $35,000, $40,000 a year or more, and you got decent credit, you should be buying properties. You should be owning properties just because of the long-term value of what it is. It doesn't take long for those properties to go up in value. And even if they don't go up in value, they get paid down, and over a period of time, you're going to have a big chunk of equity in those properties. It may take you 10 years, may take 20 years, but you have to look at how much time you have till you retire. And some of these things, they're appreciating, if they're appreciating, 12, 15%, which they are in some of these areas, then it'll only take 7 years. On a 15%, 7 years is what it takes to double its value. So if you bought it for $150,000, you just made $150,000 in equity in that short period of time. Now, if it makes 3%, it's still only taking 15 years or so. I can't remember what the exact multiplier is on that. But it's still taking only, that time goes by so quickly. And the older I get, the quicker it goes by. The quicker I realize it's going by. And it really comes quickly, and you need to be prepared for it. And this is a great way to build a nest egg that will be there for you when you retire. And you won't have negative cash flow for very long. If you start out with a negative cash flow, it takes a year, two, 3 years before that negative cash flow is completely gone because your rents raise, plus your values raise, plus you get the depreciation. And if you look at the stuff that we're doing, that $150 a month that you may have as negative cash flow, you're going to get that back as tax depreciation on your income anyway. So it's a wash, or sometimes you come out ahead a little bit. And that's including all the property management. You're not doing this stuff yourself. You're buying it and have somebody else do it for you. So there's so many pieces to this thing, it's hard to explain it in just a short period of time. But did I answer your question, or did I go off into a tangent?
Yeah.
Yeah, yes on both?
Yes.
Okay. All right, good. Any other questions?
Joe, I got one more question.
Okay.
What changes throughout the course of a year when we find these people to lease option? They're going to pay us a fee. They're going to pay a pretty a higher premium on the property because they're not going to be able to get conventional financing. Now, you say at the end of the year, if they want to exercise that lease option, we're going to go ahead and we're going to show them how to either refinance the property and buy that. What's going to change from, 2006 to 2007 that they're able to now do that?
If the value is, if you've raised the value on it?
No,
I'm not sure I understand the question.
The people that are buying these properties from us, lease option.
Okay.
Most of them are not going to be able to get financing.
Correct.
From lenders. Now, we say after the year's over and they want to exercise their lease option, how are we going to get financing for them? How are we going to help them do that? What changes throughout the course of that year that allows them to go to a real bank and get that money?
Well, time itself will repair credit.
Not if they keep on, not paying their bills. If they're in a bad spot, most likely they're.
That's pretty clear, and it's pretty obvious. And I think that maybe you should reiterate it with your buyers to make sure they understand that. But I think most people understand that if they continue to damage their credit, they're not going to be able to buy the property.
Okay.
So, if they stop damaging their credit and they start fixing their credit, they could probably buy the property fairly quickly. I mean, I've seen credit reports be brought up, 100 points in a month, 2 months. I mean, okay. You can get stuff off your credit report just by disputing it.
You work with credit repair people?
I have a mortgage guy who can get you a loan 2 days out of bankruptcy.
All right.
From my perspective, I didn't get to talk in the last couple of minutes, so I feel the need. But I actually use a mortgage broker to do that, and that allows me to give my people a lot of info about what they need to fix, and can they take the property? Do they have the ability to do it? That's basically what I want to know.
Okay.
So, but what I do, and again, I've got a good business, so and I do a lot of houses, but that's what my mortgage guy or my mortgage team is there for, to actually let my folks know this is what you need to do to correct, and this is how long you expect. So
do you pay your mortgage team, or is it just like a win-win because you're sending them so much business?
I'm sorry?
Do you pay your mortgage team, or is it just a win-win because you send them so much business?
I get paid by my mortgage team. But
yeah, you get the mortgage people to pay you.
Oh, yes. Yeah. There's lots of ways to make income and lots of it passive, but I throw quite a bit of business around to my mortgage people, and I get paid for them.
Okay.
And they
love him for it too. They love him, and they do everything they can. They bend over backwards to try to make it work for him.
The current guy I use is actually the owner of a fairly decent sized company called Addis, which has got 5 or 6 locations and it's got over 100 employees. One of the owners actually deals with my phone. That's exactly how much they like my business.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Who else has a question?
Joe, again, is it better to send a voice blast to 100 people for rent, people who want to rent, or is it better to just talk to them? What gets better response?
The voice blast is easier. You know, if you send out a voice blast, you're going to get people to call you back, and so you get a better response.
Yeah, it looks like a sales call sometimes when people don't return like an automated message.
It's really hard to tell that those are sales calls if you record them right. You know, they know that they know it's on some level it's a sales call because you're trying to turn it into a lease option. But if you call them up and just say, "Hey, I was wondering if you'd consider if you record this message." Says, "Hi, I saw your ad in the paper, and I was just wondering if you'd consider, you know, selling your house on a rent to buy rather than just renting it. You know, if you'd be interested in doing that, if you could give me a call, I'd appreciate it. My name is number and all that stuff." So that and then
if
that gets blasted out.
If they pick up the phone, then just the message will start anyways.
If they pick up the phone, you could set it up so that it hangs up, and it'll say, you know, wrong number or something like that. The machine will do that for you. So you can set it up to have a recording play, but that's less effective in my opinion. But I haven't really tested that part of it. We just did it the other way. But I can tell you, when you start doing that and they're calling back, you know, they're pretty good leads. I mean,
yeah, out of that 100, you've already whittled down the ones that aren't interested,
right?
And have a handful of people that are very interested.
Yeah.
By definition, you're getting a much better.
When you do a blast like that, only about 40% of them or so, 50%, somewhere in that neighborhood, will actually go through and leave a recording. And probably out of that 100, you're going to get 8 or 10 responses even out of that first batch, because we're averaging about 8-10%.
Nope.
And so hopefully that answers the question.
I'm sorry, Joe?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Dan from Whiting in Indiana.
Hey, Dan.
Nice to finally talk.
Yeah.
I've just been kind of listening today.
Another Indiana boy.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the one who had a problem with the association. Remember I wrote you, I think it was last week, the rental I had, I put sign in yard, and I found out it was, I guess, a neighbor who had sent that email.
Oh, right.
Rentals weren't allowed there.
Right.
But I was going to say that I use Craigslist, send out emails there. I just go through it, I pull up like Chicago area, Northwest Indiana, and what I do is I just send out emails saying that I'm looking to possibly rent your property with a lease option, and kind of leave some contact info, and I've been getting a lot of responses that way.
Yeah, that's a good method, and you know, RentClex is out there. There's a whole bunch of rental sites on there, and you can go through and you can send emails to those people. I mean, and this also works with For Sale By Owners. If you get onto, you know, to ForSaleByOwner.com and start sending emails to those people. And you just make them as personal as you can, so they don't look like you're spamming everybody. I mean,
that's great.
Yeah, we've used all that stuff, and it's really effective. It's good thinking.
Especially if I'm trying to, by the way, hound down a one of the ways to look at this, by the way, and what good investors do is we look outside of the box all the time. So outside of, you know, we talk about creating a buyer's list all the time. I get folks who have money but I don't have a house that they're looking for, and I'll literally then backtrack. So the business comes in two ways. I have houses that people want to buy, and then I've got people who want to buy houses, and I've got what they're looking for. So once I get a good buyer and I know they've got $5,000 in their hand, they're looking for something, the search then continues. So I'll go to the one of the great places to then pinpoint stuff is for sale by owner sites, because I can literally look exactly for what I'm looking for and then kick off 10 emails and ask if anybody's interested. And if I do 10 emails, I'll get somebody who will say yes. So not only can you get your, you know, I guess the other point is not only can you get your business one way, it works both ways when you start bringing buyers in.
Oh, yeah.
You literally know what you're hounding out.
Right. This is why it explodes on you. You know, then you get so busy you can't handle it all. And then you got to really get systematized. You got to step back from your business a little bit and start over again. But once you have to learn these processes before you can really make it happen. All right. Any other questions?
Yeah, Gerald, this is Larry again there. Jim, if you could, could you put me back on your list here?
Yeah,
for the conference call, I appreciate that. Yeah, I have to leave you here. I have to go make some donuts here. I'm just kidding. Mm-hmm. It was great listening to you guys here, and it's great listening to everybody else out there. And again, thank you, Joe.
You bet.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Larry, give me your email real quick.
Yeah, info@42houroffer.com.
info@42houroffer.com. Houroffer.com. Got it.
Hey, Larry, are you coming to the buying event? January?
Yes, I'm going, Joe. I'm pushing out, and I got my landline phone going in tomorrow, and I will be on the phone this weekend. I just made up some signs here on I'll make an offer on your home there, running my ads here. I'm going to go to work for you.
Okay.
All for me.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys again.
Good. Put you on the list.
All right, then.
All right. Thanks, Larry. Good talking to you.
Thank you, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Oh, you're welcome, man. You're welcome.
All right.
I wanted to just mention here on this call too, Joe, that that my team is and for those of you who are not in the mentor program and on this phone call, one of the great things about it is the team program, and I have a conference call with my folks that are on my team once a week, and that gives an extra ability for time to talk to somebody who can answer your questions. One of the great things about being in the mentor program.
That's cool.
Having Bob, I, or somebody being able to, you know, weekly or biweekly answer your problems. And I get, you know, emails from my team or team members, you know, constantly. So even during the week, you know, how do I fix this? How do I handle that?
What is your full name again?
James Grail.
James. Okay, James.
Jim's fine, by the way.
All right.
But my real name's James Grail.
Jimmy boy.
Jimmy boy.
Yeah, okay. All right. Anybody else? Any questions? I want to make sure I get everything before we leave. Okay. This has been a really interesting call. I appreciate you guys coming on. And I'm going to record this and send it out to the group on a CD, so you'll get to hear this on CD again. And I strongly suggest that you look at some of the things that we've got. You know, if you haven't gotten some of the packages that we sell, I mean, there's two different ways of looking at this whole program. I woke up the other night, a month ago or so, with this idea of the wealth triangle. I'm calling it the wealth triangle, and I haven't completely defined it in my head yet. But I know that there's three corners to it. There's time, there's money, and there's activity, and it's the basis of all wealth. You can make money if you just have money, because you can use that money to make its own money. You get interest on it. You can make money if you have time. If you have an asset and you own it over time, it'll make you money without you doing anything. And then there's activity. And activity can make money without either time or money, or, you know, without either long time or money. And so each one of those things is a different part of the wealth building process. If you add them together, you can make more money faster. If you add activity with money, you can often make money faster. If you add activity with time, you'll make money faster, and or any of those combinations of each other. So you got to look at your business or your life and decide, okay, do I have time to do activity? Do I want to build a real estate business? and put the activity into it, because if you don't do the activity, your business doesn't make you any money. An activity also makes you cash flow, makes you immediate money. And that's what we're teaching in the mentor program. Now, the other stuff, the time and the money, that's the long-term stuff that I'm talking about in the new program that we've got where we're selling properties, where you can buy these properties long-term, keep them, and they'll go up in value. And you don't do anything. It's not a business. It's owning an asset. It's like having a, you know, a piece of gold, or it's like having something that's going up in value on its own. It's actually like owning a little business on its own that's being managed by somebody else, and you're making money on it. I think that's probably the closest analogy. It makes it really easy to build your wealth, and you don't have to do anything. I think that one of the biggest problems that the people that have come through my program, the people that buy my books and tapes and CDs and stuff, it's just a time issue. Life gets in the way. We are so busy as a society that it's very hard to get this stuff done. There's also inertia, there's fear, there's all sorts of other things that get involved to keep people from succeeding or to take action on stuff. And if you're not going to take action on stuff, then at least get into it where you buy the asset. These assets, the way we're doing it, is so easy to get into. You got to get your credit cleaned up if you don't have good credit. But if you got good credit, you know, that's basically all you need. You need a little bit of money, but you're going to get all that money back when you buy the property. And your negative cash flow is going to be very minimal. One of the example that I give on that website, joecrump.com/best response, that little contest we did, my example was, the guy said, well, you know, why do I want to take negative cash flow? It seems like I'm not making any money here. Well, my example was, what if I asked you, if you take $100 and you deposit that into a bank account every month, $100 every month, I'll deposit $900 into that same account every month, and the only catch is that you can't withdraw the money for 10 years. But after 3 years, you can stop putting in the $100 a month. I'll put in the $100 for you, and I'll put in $1,000 a month every month for the rest of the 10 years. After the 10 years, you can pull the money out if you want to, take the whole $120,000, or I'll give you another option, and you can leave that money in. And if you pull that money out, you have to pay taxes on it, capital gains. But, or you could leave that money in, I'll continue to give you $1,000 a month. I'll keep adding to that. In addition to that, I'll also give you $1,000 in cash every month so that you can spend it. And if you want to, you can, out of that $120,000, you can borrow against it. And, you know, any payment that you have on that, if you take out the whole $120,000, you can borrow against that money. And the money that I give you is $1,000 can make those payments for you if you need to borrow that money and pull it out at some point. And you don't have to pay any capital gains on it. Now, that's what we're talking about with negative cash flow. That's what we're talking about owning these properties. It's such a powerful, powerful concept. And if you didn't understand what I said, go to that website I gave you at joecrump.com/best response, because there were what I did, I had everybody write in and tell me what I was talking about. And they give me all these different definitions of what I was talking about. And most of them were dead on, and they understood exactly what I was talking about. It made sense, because when you put it that way, it's a lot clearer. Oh, yeah, it makes sense to put $100 up if you're going to make $1,000. How many? And now it's not only a matter of does it make sense, but it's a matter of how many $100 can I come up with? You know, if I did this 10 times, would you put in, you know, 10 times that $900? Well, absolutely. That's the way this whole thing is set up. It's all modular. You can buy as many properties as you want, and you can build your business. Now there's limits to the amount of loans that you can get. But you're not going to have to worry about that for 10 or 20 loans. So it's going to take you a while to make that happen. And after that, there's other options. There's private money. There's hedge funds. There's other things like that you can deal with. And we can get into that if you ever get to that point. So, but anyway, I wanted to throw this out. It's also the way I structured this, I wanted to make it possible for you to buy multiple properties. And that's why I structured it in a way so you get your money back. And we structured it as a joint venture so that when you close the deal, we've got a joint venture together. I go to the builder, I buy these properties in bulk. And the reason I'm able to get these deals on them is because I'm buying them in bulk. You know, I take a small cut, I give you guys the 10% after closing, and everybody does well in it. Plus, I'm able to buy properties for myself. And that's the reason I originally started this, because I knew I had to build my portfolio up. And in order to do that, I wanted to get my best pricing on it. I knew that I'd get a much better deal from a builder if I was able to go in and buy 20 houses instead of one. And so that's what I set up. I also knew that I was able to go to the property manager and say, look, I've got 50 houses here that we're going to bring you. Would you give us a good deal? And that gives me leverage talking to the property manager and makes the prices a little lower and makes sure that they're going to pay attention to our properties. If I went in with just one property or five or ten, they're not going to be nearly as impressed, and they're not going to take care of me nearly as well, because they know if I pull the deal, you know, okay, they've only lost a few hundred dollars. But if I pull 50 properties, they've lost thousands of dollars a month in their revenue. So these are some really powerful techniques that we're talking about with this new long-term stuff, and it's something that you should really pay attention to and see what we're doing and look at the properties that we've got. I guess while I'm preaching about this, I might as well tell you I've got two lists of people that we're selling to. The first notification list, which whenever I get a new batch that I release it to the first notification list first. And I 24 hours later after that, if I haven't sold them all, then I release it to my larger list, to my whole 40,000 investor list. And you can be on that. Everybody's on, that's on this call is on that list already, assuming I have a current email address for you. But the first notification list, if you want to be on that list, what I ask is that you put up $1,000 in escrow. And it's not money you're giving me, it's just money that's going to sit in an escrow account, and I'm a broker, so you can set it into an escrow account, and then when you buy, it can apply towards your purchase, or if you decide you're not going to buy at some point, you can have the money back. But during the time that you have that money in there, you get on that first notification list, and you get to be the first to hear about these properties, that group, and it's a very small group right now. There's, I don't know, 15, 20, 25 people, no, actually, there's more than that. It's less than 50. It's less than 50 right now. So, and considering that we only get 10, 15, 25, 30 properties at a pop, they move pretty quickly sometimes. So if you want to be on that list, you can. And once you buy a property as well, you're on that list automatically. So, and you don't have to keep the money in escrow. So that's kind of the rules on that. If you guys are interested, I'd love to have you on the list and love to sell you these properties and show you how you can work with us. And if you're in the mentor program and you want to partner with us on those, if you get in the mentor program, I'm partnering with those folks on these deals as well. So that might be something worth looking into as well. Anyway, any final comments or questions that I should field before we call it a day? Okay. Jim, you still on the line?
I sure am.
Man, I appreciate you coming on. It's really nice having you around. You've been with me all day today with the other call as well.
I'm sitting here and rewriting some stuff for my websites and stuff, and just wanted to, I had the time today. I thought it would be a good thing to jump on. And like I said, my team is doing really well. I think that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to get on. We've been doing this for a while. My team is seeing just tremendous success. I've got most of them making money in one way, shape, or form. I just wanted to be able to get back a little bit and talk and let everyone know that the process has been working really well and just kind of jump on and help. So.
Well, it's appreciated. All right, everybody. Thank you very much for coming. And
thanks, Joe.
We'll see you next time. We'll probably do this again in 3 or 4 months. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.